edition of Maniacal Books Monthly. It's Alex Mike here. I am running behind. It's super late. I'm still, working hard to put this thing together. And it's really late. I have to get up in a couple hours and go to work. And I'm going to feel every bit of this in the morning, I'm pretty sure. But I have a pretty good show for you guys this month. So thanks for checking it out once again. And so I'm just going to get right into it. And hopefully you enjoy it. I got a great interview with Black Panels from the Fresh Blurred Air podcast, plus a bunch of reviews from a couple of horror books and the comic book series, Anita Hall's Volume 2, as well as The Fall of the House of Usher from Netflix. So, without any further hesitation, let's get right into it. Greetings, folks. Alex Mack from Maniacal Books Weekly here. Have you caught an episode of the podcast? And did you actually enjoy an episode? Then become a supporter. For as little as 99 cents a month, your contribution goes a long way in helping the production of the show, as well as help generate content every week. And don't forget to catch us on Google Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, Audible, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Radio Republic, and Stitcher. All right, so thank you for joining us here, Maniacal Books Monthly, for episode of the month of October. So like I said, I was going to do it big. I'm going to start doing it big. I'm going to start bringing in guests and things like that. Wine sampling, more games, more books, and here we go, coming right at you. So this is a good brother here that we kind of crossed paths on the good Facebook, he kind of caught my attention because he's out here doing his podcast thing, just like your boy, and this is really interesting. I caught a couple of episodes of it, and it was like good stuff, like really good stuff. It's mostly he does stuff in like kind of like the fandom pop culture kind of realm, but he also like branches off to a bunch of different things as well. He is name of his podcast is called Fresh Blurred Air. Brother goes by the name of Black Thanos. Like, you gotta say that with a stank face, know what I'm saying? Like, Black Thanos.
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah, welcome to the show, man. Welcome to the pod. Thank you for joining.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, no doubt, bro. No doubt. But before I get it off with my question, because I know because when we were talking, I was like, this is kind of like a book podcast. It's kind of the narrative driven or whatnot. But and my man was like, yeah, that's cool. But I'm trying to talk some hoop. Okay, I don't know what you're talking about. I'm trying to talk some hoop. I'm saying, but tell me a little bit about you, man. Like, yeah, what's going on with you guys?
Because like for me, like with the podcast thing, I started, I guess, right around the time when the pandemic happened, and my job had let me go, so I was in the house, and I was enjoying it for a while, but I wasn't used to being out of work that long. So I think I did a year and a half. I don't know. I was in the house for a year and I was just sitting at home doing nothing. YouTube, playing video games all day, sleeping, and that's it.
Yeah. A little bit of the same. So was that this year? Did that happen this year?
That was, I think like the pandemic since it kicked off in like 2020.
Like around 2020. Okay. Yeah, a little bit of the same. I got laid off like February this year, and like, yeah, for a couple of months, it was nothing. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, it was nothing. Like, it's like I work IT, so it's sort of kind of normal that the contract ends and things like that. And so you kind of like either you get brought back in or you just got to go back out there and like, try to find something else. Yeah. But yeah, this year it was crazy. It was like nothing. It was normally you get hits here and there. Know what I'm saying? But it was just desert. Yeah, it scared the hell out of me. Well, actually, I ain't gonna do that. Let's just go right into the questions. You know what I'm saying? So yeah, again, this is kind of like a narrative driven or book driven podcast. So just a little bit about a little bit about your background, like what brought you in the fandom. You know, so my first question, basically, your background and what's your podcast about?
So when I initially had a podcast before, I had it with a friend of mine, and what I wanted to, focus on, I wanted to be, not just focus on one topic and everything. I want to be able to, have something for everybody.
Word.
And me and my friend had the podcast before, and we did like a whole, multiple episodes. But then I started, being complacent, and I want to, branch out and do my own thing, which is what I'm doing right now, which it took me a while to get to where I'm at right now.
Yeah.
Until I found my comfort zone. My podcast that I have now is about, I dabble into sports, anime, wrestling, relationships, current events, whatever's going on in the world. And I try to, have a diverse, type of guests and everything. And because I tell everybody, up front, I let them know, this is what I'm doing. This is the kind of, podcast that I'm, trying to put out there.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, same, a little bit of the same here. I'm, trying to find my way through this thing. Because I started out doing it with a buddy of mine too. And, just kind of drifted apart. And yeah, we kind of in the same boat kind of. All right, so so the next one is, this being mostly a literary podcast, what would you consider your favorite or most influential book, in your life, or like something that kind of like feeds your life, basically?
For me, I would say Where the Wild Things Are.
Ooh, okay. Oh, that's different. All right. Yeah.
One of my first books that I came across when I was a kid, and I just, immerse yourself into, fantasy and everything.
Yeah.
And, getting into that, and then, it takes you to another, it takes you to another space.
Yeah. That being, it's called a kid's book kind of, but it really is, it delves kind of deeply into your imagination and how things can just spring forth from your mind, especially at its purest form as a little kid. You know what I mean? Like when your imagination is kind of pure and just super boundless, So yeah, I connected with it too, though. I connected with that book when I was a kid too. So yeah, I haven't thought about that in at least a couple of decades. I forgot all about that book. All right. So number three, is there an author that you would consider your favorite?
For me, I didn't really do too much of a lot of, because my brother, he's more of the reading type person. He reads more than me, but I have my, my choices of what author I what's the name? R.L. Stein.
Yeah, dope. Okay, yeah, love it. Yeah, no doubt. Don't worry about it. I'm yelling at my kid.
Oh,
R.L. Stein. Yeah, I grew up on that. Yeah, I read damn near every Goosebump book, and so yeah, I was just, because it's that season, it's the spooky season, right? And so I think Netflix just added the show on there, and I was looking through that a couple hours ago. Add to the favorites. I'm gonna come back, circle back around for that. Yeah, no doubt. Love it. What do you look for I'll go past that, because you said you're not the the bookworm like I am. You're not that hopeless nerd like I am. You do a lot of content within the greater pop culture, especially in blurred culture. What was the moment that got you into fandom? And was it a comic book? Was it a movie or an animated series or what?
It was more of all of it rolled in together, because when I was younger, being a blur, there was never a name for it. It was just a nerd. and people would, you know, make fun of you and all that other stuff, and you didn't really have your, you know, close-knit, you know, community, because everybody was closed off and they was like, you know, scared to put themselves out there because they're gonna get made fun of.
Yeah, there was, when I was in, I don't want to date myself, but I mean, come on, it's, but whatever. But so yeah, when I was in like middle school, high school, yeah, there was no such thing as a blur.
Because I look at people now, yeah, like the people I grew up in high school with, now they saying, you know, yeah, I love anime. I was like, no,
yeah,
no, like no.
We did not talk about anything, right? Because the minute you mention like a comic book or whatever, your ass is getting beat.
Yeah,
like, beat your ass. You know what I'm saying? The only time you can talk about that is when you nice throwing them. You know, you gotta be nice. You gotta be nice with the hands, you know, to keep them off mm-hmm. with you. But yeah, no, there was no like. I kind of envy kids nowadays because like pop culture and like geekdom and all that's just kind of like matter of fact. But yeah, back then, nah, because I was into Star Trek hard back then, and nah, I wasn't talking about no damn, you know, Captain Picard. You know, I wasn't talking about that. Nah. Not in my high school.
They don't want to hear that.
Yeah, you might rock it with it. Nah, you better, you know, I don't know, talk about Snoop Dogg or some shit, you know. But all right, so next one. What was the superhero or comic book that speaks more to you?
Comic book that speaks more to me, I would say The Flash.
Okay. Yeah, respect it. Yeah, Flash is dope. Yeah, no, no doubt. I don't know which one speaks more to me. I don't know, man. You can go with the like the surface level, like Black Panther or something. But I don't know. I've always been a Gambit guy. I've always like gravitated to Gambit because I read, like, my comic of choice was X-Men, like back in high school or whatnot, right? And so.
Right.
Remy always seemed cool. It always seemed like we can like just hit the mall and bullshit and holler at girls with like Gambit, you know. He seemed like that type of, he was on that type of time, you know what I'm saying? So yeah, I always like, huh?
Demon time.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, that was all. That was all Remy, just hitting the mall, getting numbers. But he was always on that time. If you could pitch your own comic book or novel to a publisher, what would it be?
I could, I guess like some of, I would probably, because I write a lot of skits, like in my free time, whatever. And like, okay. Since I'm a big wrestling fan, I incorporate skits into like the wrestling world and everything. And
yeah,
that would, you know, be, yeah, take different situations and put it in like a wrestling format.
Oh, that sounds like booking. So okay, so you can like book your own, like your own shows, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Oh, that's, man. Yeah, we gonna be bros, man. Like, yeah, I can get all into that. Yeah, no doubt. All right, where am I? Just a couple more. Do you feel we're getting towards better representation in pop culture media after the major success of things like Black Panther and the Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse movies, you know, as far as like Black representation, specifically like Black male in like greater pop culture?
I feel it's getting better because we didn't, I would say, when it comes to like that, the only thing that we had before we got the MCU was Blade and Thor.
Yeah.
And that was like,
yep,
pretty much it.
Yeah, and the Blade, the first two Blade, especially the first one, was dope as hell. Like that was a moment. Like that was like a true moment when that came out. So yeah, I remember that. And Spawn, you know, I think to this day, a lot of people still don't know that Spawn, what's his name? Al Simmons is Spawn's name. I think a lot of people still don't know, like, that's a Black character, though, you know, because they see him after he was reincarnated, you know, as the Hell Spawn with the mask. But a lot of people don't really, like, know his backstory like that, which is unfortunate.
That was horrible.
Yeah. Where do you think things can get better?
I try to, expand, because we had, they did Black Lightning, Black Panther, yeah. Spider-Man, Miles Morales.
Yeah.
Like those, like little, little sprinkles here and there. Yeah. Trying to go into the vault, check out some, bring some people together.
Yeah, I will. I like where we're going. I like where we're going. Where now it's it doesn't have to be this huge big production. This is the first time ever kind of thing. You know what I'm saying? It's more like I would love to see more smaller stories, more like human level stories in the whole superhero realm. But it's in a good spot though. I think it's in a decent spot though.
Travel with me to a dark and isolated farm located deep in the heart of St. Mary's County, Maryland, where the only African-American farmer and his family are being tormented by some thing stalking around their property. Can they survive? Can they protect the farm that is their very livelihood? And can they do it with their sanity intact? Are you in the mood for dark, isolated, rural horror? Are books full of ghastly green goo and reanimated corpses your jam? Then check out Mulch, the eerie inaugural novella from Maniacal Books, available today on Amazon Kindle.
All right, so now we're gonna go ahead and transition, because I heard you brought it up a couple times already. But now, as far as the wrestling go, so now I'm a wrestling fan from back in the 80s. All right, so I done seen a couple things now. Mm-hmm. Let me ask you. Top five fave wrestlers, dead or alive.
Top five.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Christian.
Okay.
Rey Mysterio.
Yeah.
Eddie Guerrero.
Absolutely.
Stone Cold.
Yeah.
And CM Punk.
CM Punk. Okay. Yeah. Solid. Solid list, yeah, no doubt. Let me see if I can top that. top five. All right, I'll go with Brett.
Mm-hmm.
RVD. Undertaker.
Mm-hmm.
Rock. Macho Man. Yeah, that's. I go. It's solid. It's pretty solid.
Yeah.
It's all right. All 10 legends. So yeah, you can't be mad at that. But am I done? I think I'm okay. All right, last question. Last question for me, and then we can go on. On your side. But as far as wrestling goes, what do you think of the state of wrestling these days? Are you into it? Is it getting better to you? Is it still floundering? What you think?
Sure, I'm still a fan of it as I was since I've been growing up. I actually got it up right now.
Wow, really? You still rocking with it that hard?
I still rock with it.
Wow, I fell off. I fell off, man. It got interesting when AEW came back. It got really interesting in that moment. And I don't know. Then AEW became what it is. But I still would rather have AEW in existence, than just have WWE just.
It's pretty much, owning everything.
Yeah, it's the minor league, AEW. That's not fair. That's not fair. It's not the minor league, but it's kind of in between, but I still watch it every now and then and like it. But yeah, so you still rock with it. It's the attitude era. You still.
Yep. I go crazy every time. When I go to the event, I still act the same way.
I haven't been. I went to Raw a while ago. I want to say 2016, 2015 was the last time I went. When it was in Capital One Arena, I saw everybody though. I legit saw everybody. I think that was back. Yeah, it was back when the Shield was the thing. And so, because I saw Roman. Roman was like in my section when he's coming through the cloud, through the crowd, and everything. So that was cool as hell. I saw Big Show. I saw Brock and Paul Heyman was there. Edge was there. Edge was who's like just went to AEW. He was there, and Edge and Christian was there. Matter of fact, and Seth Rollins. I saw him there too. It was fun though. Like it was, and I wasn't watching it at the time either. But my aunt had gotten tickets, and she's like, "You want to go?" I'm like, "Yeah, all right, sure, I'll go." And had a ball, man. It was fun as hell, bro. Like
Have you met anybody?
You know the crazy thing is, I didn't meet not one wrestler, but when we were leaving. We were like, Rob was over and we were leaving. Mm-hmm. Ryan Kerrigan was in there, like in the crowd, just randomly. That was the only person I met at like a wrestling event was Ryan Kerrigan, the former like defensive end from the Redskins. It wasn't even the Commanders then, you know. But yeah, that was cool. That was, and my phone died. Like I couldn't even take a picture because my phone died. I was too busy recording and stuff like the event, and I meet a Redskin and my damn phone died. But yeah, that was cool. So yeah, man, hey, thank you, man. Thank you for joining the pod and hanging with me, answering some questions or whatnot. And I appreciate it, man. I definitely want to have you back on so we can talk some more wrestling and all that good stuff, man. So yeah, thank you, bro. Black Thanos with the stank face. You gotta do it with the stank face. Thank you, bro. It is officially spooky season, Halloween time here at Old Maniacal Manor. And every time this year, I get like all giddy and whatnot because I'm just in there. I love horror. I don't know what it is about me, but I love horror. I always have been ever since I can remember. And so, of course, when I first came in contact with this book right here, years and years and years ago, it immediately intrigued me, and just the cover. The cover just got me, like old spooky looking dude, like just walking through a ye old graveyard, and I was hooked. I'm like, oh, Revenge of the Witch, Last Prince. Okay, let's do this. And ever since then, this has been a book that's been kind of near and dear to me, because it's still, I could say, it's still my favorite book series. Of mine that's going, and yeah, I'm really excited to kind of just introduce this and out on video and proclaim my love from the rooftops of this series. It's really good to me, kind of overlooked because it's kind of YA. It kind of falls in that YA kind of category, but it's very much deserves any horror fan's attention. And so yeah, that brings me to The Last Apprentice, book one, actually, Revenge of the Witch by Joseph Delaney. It was published way back in September 6th, 2005 by Green Willow Books. And so, yeah, like I was saying, I used to work in a Ballston Common Mall in Virginia. Oh, this is like 2007-ish, I want to say. And I was actually working like data entry for E-Trade. And like, you know, I would, on my lunch breaks, since it was in the mall, it was actually like in the mall. And I would, like on lunch breaks, I'd just go downstairs and kind of like just go, I would gravitate towards too. There's like a video game shop in there where you could like sit down and actually play like the on the 360. And then there's like Walden Books was in there. I believe it was Walden Books. And I would constantly gravitate towards those two stores. And this one time, I think I had finished reading something else. And I was in the mood for like a good horror. Like I was wanted for something dark, something moody, something good, you know? And yeah, and saw this cover and was just like, yeah, okay, you, that one. And yeah, ever since then, I loved it. There's about eight books proper of the Last Apprentice series, which is called the Warstone Chronicles in Europe. Because Joseph Delaney, he's actually an author from Europe, from London, if I believe, or England, I guess you could say. And I guess to bring it over here or import it over here, they decided to change the name and all that stuff. But yeah, it's called the Warstone Chronicles, and at least eight or nine books of that, I believe. But and also he kept it going with Thomas Ward and Alice and a couple of other characters, and he kept it going. So there's like actually other books, but they're not part of the Last Apprentice saga, because he kind of like they're more adult kind of books, they're more matured books, but it still keeps the same tone. And love them. I love all of them. So like in total, I have read like 15 books town, the same county, same characters, same story, same lore. It's about like I want to say maybe 15 in total I've read, and I will keep them up. I love reading them. As a matter of fact, I'm kind of doubling back now and like read the first one. And I love it. So okay, I'm blabbering. I'm babbling. I love this book. So I'm blabbering. I'm probably going to blabber off a couple of times because I love this book. I love this series. But okay, what is this about? What is The Last Apprentice: Revenge of the Witch about? So in this is back in like medieval days, as you tell by the cover. And this is back when there are like blacksmiths and farmers and bakers and butchers and laborers and, you know, things, people that work trades basically. And so one of the trades that has kind of that died out, I guess, like a bit sooner than the other ones is like the spook. And so the spook or the county spook basically is if you have a witch, or you suspect that there's a witch about, causing up trouble. If you suspect there's a haunted house or something, or a haunted graveyard, or, you know, something of that nature, then it's like, oh, okay, we got to hire a spook. And so a spook is basically somebody who knows how to deal with witches and spirits and ghosts and things like that, right? And so in this town, the county spook, named Old Gregory is old basically. And so he needs he's getting up in age, you know, he's about at that retirement age. And so the town really starts looking for a new spook. And so this, as you can imagine, this isn't a popular job. Like nobody, there's not a people around the block lining up to be the next county spook. And so this is when a young kid called Thomas Ward, who is the seventh son of a seventh son, that kind of becomes important in this story. His mom actually signed him up to become like the apprentice of the spook. And so and I think the spook, old Gregory, has had 12 other apprentices, like young boys, as apprentices. All of them died horribly. Like all of them did. But Thomas don't know that on the offset. He just knows that his mom, or ma'am, as he calls her, just kind of signed him up, and he is 12 going on 13, I believe. And so it's around the time where, like, you know, young boys should, like, start taking up a trade, or, you know, like, if somebody's going to be a blacksmith, then they, like, when you're about 12 years old, then you start, like, going to the blacksmith to become an apprentice to, like, learn how to, like, make stuff like shields and goat shoes and you know, the things of the light, right? And so now he has to leave his home, basically, in order to go with this strange dude called Old Gregory. And so in that, and one of the things I love about the story, this is like Joseph Delaney wrote this masterfully, because it's like a fully realized lore to this, as far as chaining witches, taming ghosts and boggarts, and dealing with haunted houses. If I could say one thing, he really thought this through. Like, he actually put a lot of thought into this, because there is you could probably make an unofficial handbook out of all this stuff. What he put in there, it's almost was this real? Is that maybe in some old London town ship or something? There's old spooks handbook that he copied from. I don't know, but it's very detailed and it's very imaginative and it's very good. I loved it. Yeah. Again, the seventh son of the seventh son. So there's real life. There's a real world thing going on with the seventh sons. I've come to find out that's actual thing. Right. And so I don't, it's that old old world superstition, supernatural hoodoo thing where the seventh son is supposed to be a special or extra sensitive or something like that. Right. And so Thomas Ward being the seventh son of a seventh son means that he is tailor made basically to become the next spook. And take on this job. And so, and not only is Tom a seventh son, but Old Gregory too. We come to learn that Old Gregory is also a seventh son. And so that's what makes him such a badass, dealing with all this craziness out there, right? And so he is going on about his studies and he's learning, and then until Old Gregory gets called to a town of Pendle, and because there is a coven or a suspected coven of witches going on there, and there is the town people fear that they're trying to bring back old Mother Malkin, who is a long dead witch but was super powerful and just caused havoc throughout the whole county, right? And so people, when she was finally killed or handled, the whole town celebrated, but she wasn't properly buried or whatever. And so there's just threat of her coming back, and wouldn't you know it, guess who comes back? So through a set of circumstances, Thomas Ward, who's still, this is on the job training basically, he still, since Old Gregory is he's busy, he's been dealt with, he's out of the picture, so Thomas has to, he kind of gets thrown in the situation by a girl named Alice, and he has to use his wits and his limited knowledge of spookery. That's not even a word, I just made that up. That's not in the book or nothing, I just call it spookery. Let's go with that. And to survive the threat of Mother Malkin and all, that whole coven, and hopefully survive till we get to the next chapter of The Last Apprentice. I mean, spoiler warning, I said on the outset it's about 15 books with Tom in it, so I mean it's okay. Anyway, so what do I like about it? A lot. I like a lot, including the cover. Patrick Arrowsmith, hold on, let me Google my guy. I believe that is his name, or illustrated Patrick Arrowsmith. I was right. Yeah, I was right. So Patrick Arrowsmith is the guy who illustrates in this book. So there are, it's there isn't a lot, but there are like a couple of illustrations in the book, and it's really, really like detailed, like really kind of like old worldy kind of like illustrations, like this, right? Like and this is great. Like the illustrations like really fit the tone and the feel of the book. It makes it feel very kind of like old world and like kind of drudgery and dark and dirty and grimy. You know, it's that kind of book, it's that kind of story. Now and all for it. I love it. It's especially for this time of year, this is a perfect book for this time of year, you know, because it's got a lot of stuff. It's got haunted houses in it. Like right off the bat, Thomas, first thing that old Gregory and Thomas does is go to like this haunted house. And this is just kind of like an initiation or no. It's kind of like orientation for Tom, because this is like kind of like the first thing that Gregory introduces him to, and he kind of like goes through how to handle it, how to deal with it. And he actually leaves him there like overnight to see if he'll like stay there in the haunted house or if he'll run. Like, I mean, hey, old Gregory is a great spook, but I did not say he wasn't a dick. So yeah, there you go. But I actually really, throughout the series, I really come to like, really like old Gregory. And the older I get, I so identify with him on a lot of levels, man. Like, yeah, I'm with you, old Gregory. So this, and I mentioned earlier, this is like a YA kind of middle grade read. It's in that section, however, and it kind of is. There isn't any like intricate prose. There isn't any like double meaning or like entendres or any like really insightful kind of like narrative that, you know, you have to kind of like read and sit back and absorb it. No, it's very straightforward. It's very accessible, and that's, you know, for the where's my glasses? I don't want my glasses. But for the snobby bookworms, that's a problem, right? That's an issue. I mean, I'm like, no, just tell me a good story. Don't like meander about. Just like get straight to the story, get to the narrative. Like, I'm not the one that needs like a whole bunch of flowery prose and whatnot to make it feel like it's something. Like, no, if you write it good and effectively, and this thing is scary as hell and it's going, like, yeah, I'm good. I'm down. It's for real. But with that said, like when I first saw this, it was in the YA section. However, there are in every book, I can say there are a handful of like very, very intense like scenes in this. So I wouldn't say this is for little kids. But it is at the same time, it's not adult only. Like if you have a kid that's like really into horror, really into like darker stuff, I'm pretty sure they love this book. They love the series actually. But yeah, it's not for the faint of heart. Like it don't let that YA tag, like fool you. Like, nah, it gets gruesome sometimes and gets like really intense. That's why I love it. I love the story. I love the series. Like, God, I love this series. I can't express to you enough how much I love this series. Also, what I love about this, great characters. Like I mentioned it. Like I know these characters. Well, I've been reading them since 2007. Actually, this is the first time I've read one of these books in probably like a decade. What is this, 2023? Yeah. Actually, no. Probably like 2015, 16, or something like that. Probably was like the last time I actually like read one. It was like the Dark Army, or something like that. They go on this whole like second story with this character named Slither and Grimalkin that gets introduced like way down the line, but. Yeah, again, I'm naming off these characters because I love this series, and a huge part of this series is the characters. And Joseph Delaney is an awesome ass writer because he makes really great, relatable, complex characters with complex, like, motivations and things like that. And he makes them all kind of like gel in the county, in the world, in the universe, that makes everything like all the more believable and gritty, you know. And yeah, it's great characters. Old Gregory, like I said, awesome. My favorite characters, other than like Thomas Ward, his mom is badass, but Grim Malkin, which she doesn't even come into play until book three or four. It's my favorite character in this whole series. She is a bad, she's like a witch assassin or whatever, right? Just badass. Just, oh my God, I love that chick. Like, I would marry her if I wasn't already taken, honestly. But, you know, that's the idea. Anyway, another thing I love about this, a straightforward read. Like I said, I kind of covered that already, but yeah, I don't really need like all that intricate, flowery kind of prose and narrative and everything. And it fits this story. It fits the series. I love it because it's very small and localized and gritty, you know, and very old worldy. And yeah, it's really good. And this is, on all accounts, like a great introduction into a great series. This, again, like this book holds a very kind of special place for me because it's one of I remember vividly seeing this in the Walden books. It's like in the middle, and it was like in the middle of like a YA section, and it was like the one like kind of like really dark character. Like, look at him; he's just like leering out at you from the hood. And I'm like, okay, yeah, I think I might like this. So, yeah, it's a great, incredible series. Very overlooked. They did make a movie out of this. It's called The Seventh Son, starring Jeff Bridges and Julianne Moore. I love Jeff Bridges and Julianne Moore. If you love movies, then you hear Jeff Bridges and Julianne Moore, you're automatically thinking the Big Lebowski, right? The dude abides. Yeah, nah, that movie was terrible. I think it had Ben Barnes in there too. Oh, God, that movie was terrible. Jeez, that's... but yeah, great series. Okay, what I don't like about the book, well, like I said, it's a pretty there are like a lot of scenes where it does get a bit gory, and it does get a little intense, you know, with the scare and everything. But I wouldn't mind, and this is like, I love this book. I love this series. So I'm just nitpicking at this point. Just honestly, there's nothing I really hate about this. Like, I love pretty much everything. But if I could be nitpicky, it could go a little bit harder for my taste. It's just my taste. It could go a little bit harder. But don't have to, because it's pretty excellent the way it is. But if I had a nitpick for that, then go a little bit harder with the you can add a bit more of the more actiony kind of scenes, and more just a little bit more gore wouldn't hurt it, you know, just a little something more is all I'm saying. It wouldn't hurt. This is the first book of a long series, and so. And also it's kind of YA-ish. So the story kind of wraps up a little bit too clean, but I'm nitpicking. This is all just nitpicking that, like, I get it. I understand it. I get it. I don't have a problem with it. And this is just me kind of coming back to this like years later, rereading this and being like, eh, I mean, it's kind of, it ends a little Christopher Columbus-y, you know? A little first Harry Potter movie kind of just dumb ending to it, you know, just a little too clean, a little too kiddy. But I'm picking again. I love this thing. So my author's introspection for this one, and author's introspection is basically just me, you know, giving kind of like my final thoughts, or like the kind of main idea of my reviews, coming from, you know, a narrative mindset, kind of as someone who kind of creates and crafts stories himself. And I just ended on with a final score. So, what is this? Hey, sometimes I question myself. Like, wait, why did I write all this? I don't know what I wrote. Jeez. Okay. Back in 2007, in that Walden Books in Boston Commons Mall in Arlington, Virginia, I walked in there searching for something compelling, something different, something dark, something fun. And once I went into this book, I knew I found a book that was extremely close to what I was looking for. The cover really stands out among other things. You know, in the bright and cheerful and vibrant covers that expand through all the several YA aisles, with the cloaked, dark, and brooding figure leering out at you from under the hood as he crosses a dark, grim-looking cemetery. Literally beckoning out at me, begging me to check it out. And once I did, I was not disappointed. This first installment in the series hits its mark for setting up the solemn medieval tale that serves as the pseudo training for us, the readers, to become spooks as well. There are better books in the series, but this will always be one of my faves because it was my first. You always remember your first. 4 out of 5. Yes, love this. The Last Apprentice. Love these. This is a serious debate. Do I go on to book 2, Curse of the Bane, or do I go to like my favorite book in the series, book 4, Attack of the Fiend? Attack of the Fiend is one of my favorite books ever. It's like top 5 for me. I love that book. I remember I'm like reading this because I have to go to work at night, but I'm up reading, like I'm in the book. I'm like on the edge of my seat. I can't turn the pages fast enough. Oh man, what a good time. What a good book. But yeah, there we go. The Last Apprentice, Revenge of the Witch. Excellent series. Clown in the Cornfield was released in 2020. Got that dumpster fire of a year on Harper Teen by Adam Cesare. And this, actually, this also looks like it's being turned into either a movie or a TV show or something like that. They have like a director already listed in the IMDb, and also they have a couple of the characters already casted out, it looks like. But there's no like final official word on like or date or anything. It's just like kind of, I think it's like early pre-production. But the director, Eli Craig, the guy who did Dale and Tucker versus Evil. And I just come to find out he's also Sally Field's kid. Like, damn, I had no idea she had kids in the industry, actually. Which is appropriate. This looks like it's going to be turned into a motion picture at some point, or I don't know, some like series, it looks like. So yeah, I can see it after reading this. Yeah, totally can see it. So okay, what is this about? So a a teenage girl named, I want to say Bree. Is it Bree? Quinn. There we go. Quinn. I knew it was something like that. So a teenage girl named Quinn moves from Philly way down to like Missouri. Middle of bumfuck Missouri. And after like a horrible tragedy happens to her there, and so they kind of, her and her dad kind of moved down there as to kind of like reset and get a fresh, start everything anew. And right when both of them are kind of like awkwardly kind of adjusting to like the townspeople and the kind of like change of pace in a small town, a killer clown starts like murdering all the teenagers there in her school. And so and a lot of it takes place in a cornfield. And clowns in the cornfield, there you have it. Okay, so what do I like about it? It's a decent, pretty quick read for the season, especially for like Halloween season. If you want like some extra thrills, Clowns in the Cornfield. Yeah, pick it up. You kind of can't go wrong with that. It's a teen slasher set to a book, basically. And so it's very tropey. This is very tropey. I mean, think Scream in the country. And that you have this book. It's nothing. I'm not say this as an old, grizzled, demented horror pro. I've been watching this horror stuff since I was like 9. So maybe for me, I'm just desensitized, and none of the kills or like scares in here was like all that bad to me, or nothing I haven't seen before. But there was one, depiction of a death here that did kind of like really get to me. There was just one. But other than that, it was pretty standard fare, And I mentioned before that it's being made into a series, and one reason I could totally buy it is, oh, this light just killed my eyes. One reason I can totally buy it is that this book actually kind of reads like a screenplay. I'm listening to the book, and I'm like, I can see the movie playing like in my head. Like it's very well written in that regard. Like it's really, really, really good. Like as a screenplay, I can pretty much see it. And it's a quick, and like I said before, it's a quick read. It's pretty quick. It's very, very kind of short and to the point. But it's a slasher. It's a teen slasher thing. So I mean, just get in there. Kill them kids, get out, So and they set up like this kind of lame cliffhanger, because there's another book that came out like I think last year or earlier this year or something like that. I might read it. I don't know. that kind of segues into like what I don't like about it. It's not that scary to me, but I don't know if I'm just not the right person to judge that. I am, again, I'm an old demented horror pro. So another YA selection here, and it's not, I mean, the writing isn't that great, honestly, but does it really need to be? I can't get on it for like not being very, very deep or even very good, to be honest. There's some sections in here where it's like, wait, please, what was that? Play that again. What was that? But it don't really need to be. I mean, the damn thing is called Clown in the Cornfield, for Christ's sake. Like, it's, we're not looking for like War and Peace in this mug, right? But with that said, it's like there are some things that was like very kind of basic and non-descriptive in here, but no likable characters. I didn't like that one character in this. I was actually rooting for the clown. Like a lot of this, I was definitely rooting for the clown. You know, like I just killed him already. God, there's 30 chapters to this. But I don't know. Yeah, I didn't really get the motivations of the clown in this. What was that dude's name? Josh, I think it was. There's a guy named Josh in here who's kind of like, I don't know if I could call him the town terrorist, but he just seemed like the town just pain in the ass, I guess. He's the town pain in the ass, and he did something very egregious in this before Quinn and her dad moved down here. And so, like, all the older people in the town, you know, decided basically they gotta die. No, I don't know. I didn't get it, but I didn't care, honestly, through this. So, yeah. And that will bring us to the author's introspection for this title. And author's introspection, just me kind of giving my main, just the main idea or like my main feeling for the, on the review. And I just top it off with like a score. And for this one, God, am I good? Okay, all right, I don't think so. What to say? author's introspection for this one, nothing much to report here. It's a quick mindless slasher story that I'm sure will be made into a fun movie or TV show once it's finished production. I'm more interested in the author, Adam Caesar. Is it Caesar or Caesare? I think it's Caesar. Who is an indie author, done well for himself. he actually got published by a big publisher. Like, that's actually pretty cool and pretty intriguing. I look forward to seeing more books come out by him to see how everything progresses now that he's being properly published. But for this release, Clown in the Cornfield, 2 out of 5. It's Clown in the Cornfield. Like, what I did was, you don't, with the title like that, you just expect it to be kind of fun and shocking, and it's fun. It's not very shocking. So, yeah. Clown in the Cornfield, 2 out of 5. Nita Hawes Nightmare Blog, Volume 2, Murder by Another Name. This volume covers issues from 7 to number 12 of this run that kind of went on a break in February of this year. And I did Volume 1, I reviewed Volume 1 of this last year, and this instantly became like one of my favorite comic books ever. For a number of reasons, so I was interested to see how this run was like. Does it keep up with does it kind of like compare to the first volume, or like, you know, how's the story going to progress from here? And so I can't wait to get into it. So so what is this volume about? Otherworldly serial killer strikes in Annapolis. Kind of starts taking off, like, very, I guess, like, wealthy or prominent people in and around Annapolis. And so the police kind of like enlist Nita's help again, but this time on the kind of like on the spiritual side. She's coming under like grave attack as well, because the serial killer is operating both in the physical and the kind of spiritual realm. And so, that gets connected to, I guess you could say, like, the head honcho of the demon world, I guess you can call him, kind of, like, makes an appearance in this as well. and you know, not only are the police trying to get needed to help, but her, like the spirit of her dead brother and Anansi are kind of like trying to keep her away from this case, because this might be a little bit more than she can handle at the moment. So what I like about it, yeah, the artwork is still on point. I might splice in some stuff in here if I get time to, but yeah, the artwork is still on point. There's nothing in here that was as gloriously gory as in the first volume, but yeah, it's the artwork is still top. And I really like Anansi in this. You know, I love how they have Anansi written in here, not because Anansi is kind of like, he's basically like a dude from the block, basically. That's just very much so like how they've written him, you know. And yeah, I love it. I love this take on the kind of like elder African trickster god they have in here. It's really dope. I really love it. You know, this, and again, this is Nap Town, or you know, Annapolis, for those of y'all who don't know about the DMV or not from the DMV. And yeah, it takes place, like a lot of the stories are like right up the block, you know, right up the street. And yeah, this is really cool to me. I really love it. So okay, what I don't like about this one, this kind of comes off, at least to me, as like the filler of the story. This is one of those times I really hate trying to like read this in volumes, you know, just waiting until like each volume come out. That's why I really like to wait until all of them are out, especially for like this one, this book especially. I want to read everything in one sitting instead of like waiting every month for like, you know, the next, I don't know what, 30 pages, you know, to come out or whatever. But yeah, that's, but even with that said, reading this whole collection, it just feels a lot like filler content. Like this was not that much happened in this. You know, the killer killed some things, actually killed Anita. Well, is that a spoiler? Is that a spoiler? All right, she's the main character, so of course not. But you know, and yeah, and she kind of comes back very quickly, dispatches like the baddie in this, and you know, they pretty much like make this a direct connection to Killadelphia, which this is like a spinoff of the Killadelphia books from Image 2. And yeah, so I guess she's on hiatus, because now she's going to go into like the Killadelphia books and do something, you know. And so yeah, this one, I love these books, I love the characters, I love the setting, but yeah, this one was, by the end of it, I was just like, that was it, man. Are we probably not gonna get anything from this for like a nice little while, but I'm waiting. I can't wait for the volume 3 to start. I haven't kept up with this really. I've been kind of going through it lately this year, so I really haven't kept up with this series. So no, yeah, nope, not a thing since February. There's no word as of yet that I see coming through. Probably gonna have to see what's going on in Killadelphia, because she's kind of, there's just like some big story happening there, which she's gonna be a part of. And so yeah, but I can't wait though. I can't wait for them to come back. And I'm gonna see if I can check out Killadelphia. I've been hearing about that for the last couple of years. Like, it's supposed to be really, really good. I'll see if I can. Probably won't, but I'll see. Okay, so the author's introspection for Nita Hawes' Nightmare Blog, Volume 2. It's basically me putting kind of like my the main idea, or like the main gist of the review, ending off with the score. Okay, this is still a series that's near and dear to me, quite literally, since it takes place in the DMV. This volume specifically takes place in Annapolis. Yeah, okay, bump that. This one, I think it's a filler. this filler to kind of get us into reading Killadelphia. There's not that much into this. Same great characters. The writing, I think, is pretty good. Like I said about like Anansi, there's not that much going on in this volume. But I can't wait for volume 3. And yeah, so I'll give this one probably like a 3 out of 5. Still worth the read. But I think volume 1 is like the strongest of the two thus far. But I can't wait for more. I'm on the lookout for it, definitely. But yeah, Nita Hall's Nightmare Blog, 3 out of 5. Fall of the House of Usher is a 8-episode series from Netflix, actually. And this is, I heard about this like months ago, and I couldn't wait. It's based off of not only the story by Edgar Allan Poe of Fall of the House of Usher, but it's basically like based off of like the entire works of Poe, most of like his most popular kind of stuff. And once I heard this was happening, and it's being ran by Mike Flanagan, who did The Haunting of Hill House and Black Mass, and I think he did Gerald's Game The Shining sequel. God, what was the name of that? I can't remember the Shining sequel's name with Ewan McGregor in it. And so yeah, I'm a huge fan of Mike Flanagan and like his works, all except for Black Mass. Black Mass was like kind of like the one anomaly in that, because normally he's solid, but that one was pretty funny. But yeah, I was so excited. I was so excited to when I saw this happening and it came out. And of course I can't watch it because it's just like kids running in and out the room when I'm trying to watch it. I'm trying to like record stuff. I'm trying to like listen to stuff. I'm trying to play stuff. Oh man. And then I got to just be at work. And so I just said, you know what? Screw it. I'm just going to start watching this at work. I don't care. I'm just going to start watching this. I have to get through this. And man, which I hate, because I want to see this. Actually would prefer to watch this in like a dark room with a big screen and like, you know, surround sound speakers. It's that kind of show. And does Mike Flanagan deliver on another one? I would think so. I would definitely think so. Again, perfect for Halloween time, perfect for spooky season. And yeah, it's, we're talking Edgar Allan Poe, man. I love it. So what's the show about? So again, this show is based loosely on the works of Edgar Allan Poe. Fall of the House of Usher, the story is about twins, Roderick and Madeline Usher. Roderick and Madeline Usher. And so in the story, the twins, Roderick is kind of like losing his mind because his twin sister is sick, and there's a doctor there, but the doctor don't know why she's sick. And so the narrator, Roderick sends a letter to the narrator to come visit him because, you know, he's feeling down, he's not feeling himself. And so Roderick decides to kind of like go out to this to see him. And the twins are in this huge manor, this huge mansion. Right, they're like very well off, basically. And so once the narrator, like, he kind of's there, they're like playing music, they're reading stories and things like that. And then one night there's a storm. Madeline dies, basically. And so the narrator helps Roderick bury his sister. And so there's one night there's a storm, and you know, Roderick is, or the narrator is reading Roderick a story. It's supposed to be like some kind of like adventure story that like kind of take his mind off of everything. You know, he's grieving and he's all, his mind's already slipping, right? His sanity is already slipping. And so he's, you know, the narrator is trying to be a good friend and like trying to help him out, you know, read him just this kind of like dumb story during a stormy night. And by him reading the story, all of a sudden like the sounds in the story are happening like in real life, you know, while as he's reading it. And so and that's where like kind of like the fright and all that stuff kind of comes in the place. And so I don't know if I want to go any further. Like, yeah, I think that's a good starting point. If you want to know the rest, read the story. It's really good, really mind-bending kind of tale. The story, the Edgar Allan Poe's like actual story, is very, very, very kind of twisted. It's like a lot of double meanings in the story itself. Like, you know, not only is the twin thing, but like the fall of the House of Usher, meaning in both ways, fall of the house, like the house actually collapsed, and then that there's the fall of the house, like the family tree kind of aspect of it. There's like the things that's happening in the story that's happening in the story kind of thing. It's genius. One of the greatest things Edgar Allan Poe ever wrote. Very, very cerebral kind of story. But in this instance, how it compares with the show compares with the book. So there is Roderick and Madeline, and they are bastard son of this I don't know, we call it a pharmaceutical corporation. And in the story, it's their mom that actually kind of like has this rare illness. The doctors don't, the show, their mom don't want to take it because you're like super religious, and it's kind of like, oh, I don't need to take Tylenol, God will heal me kind of thing happening there, right? And so the mom ends up going through that whole like scenario where like she dies, she's buried, and like during, there's a storm at night, and all of a sudden, like, you know, they start like with the they think it's thunder, but it's also thudding in the house kind of thing. And yeah, and so the, you know, the mom kind of comes, claws her way out of her grave. And I kind of don't want to spoil it. I want to talk about it, but I can't. I shouldn't spoil it. Okay, I'm just gonna leave it at that. But so it's not just that story, but they also have you know, the Black Cat, Telltale Heart, Pit and the Pendulum, and like a bunch of like old, all the good Edgar Allan Poe stories. I'm familiar with all of them because I've been reading them like since I was a kid. Except for Goldbug. I've never even heard of Goldbug. That was the only one I wasn't that familiar with. But yeah, if you are any kind of a fan of Edgar Allan Poe, there's a lot to like here. For the most part, like the how they kind of changed things around and how they mixed it up to make it like become the series, I'm not mad at it. I'm not mad. I think they did a good job, even though I can see like purists kind of like just sitting there, arms crossed, like, what is this? Right? But it's good. It's like I enjoyed this. I enjoyed it thoroughly. The one story that they did, because each episode is like a story basically. So they have like the Black Cat episode, and which is the story of the Black Cat. They have the Telltale Heart episode, which is like their interpretation of the Telltale Heart and all of that, right? But the one that I think they missed the most was probably like the Black Cat, even though it was fairly close to the story. It was just I don't know, it didn't, to me that was the weakest one. That was the weakest one to me, and that's one of the best damn stories. Cat have been one of the kind of weaker ones to me. I mean, it was good. It was just to me that it was, I don't know, they didn't really capture it all that well to me. What would be the other one? I don't Maybe Murder in Rue Morgue, maybe, was like the other one I didn't like that much. But the ones that really, that I think were really, really good was The Telltale Heart. I love how they flipped that. I really love how they kind of flipped that with the, like, the artificial heart thing in there. It was kind of genius to me. I loved it. Mask of Red Death one was I love how they flipped that one too. That one was if you're a fan of gore, oh my god, yes. You know, of course they have, you can't do anything Edgar Allan Poe if you don't have the Raven in there, of course, right? And so yeah, this is really, really good. I really enjoyed it. This is on the list of Mike Flanagan shows that I'm gonna be watching over and over and over and over. It's up there. It's right up there. Speaking of which, speaking of Mike Flanagan, it's pretty much the same. He has like this troupe. Like whenever you do these Netflix shows, it's like a theater troupe basically. It's all the same characters, or all the same actors basically coming back to kind of like do different roles and things like that, which I think is like really cool. But each one he kind of adds extra here and there, and these are actually like really, really great extras, like Bruce Greenwood, who's like a very super, he's been like acting forever, and he's been in everything. Like you just see him one time, and if you like watch a lot of movies and stuff, you're like, oh yeah, hey, that guy, yeah, okay, he's in this, nice. Mary McDonald, who, if you're a bit nerdy like I am, then you remember Battlestar Galactica, President Roslin, Battlestar Galactica. I mean, she's been in everything, very prolific. Veteran actor herself, and like that's the one thing I will always remember in is Battlestar Galactica, and of course the great, the legendary Mark Hamill in this, Luke Skywalker himself in this, with another excellent role, excellent job. Yeah, man, just. All three of them are old pros, man. They all knocked this out of the park. Man, just absolutely. But you know what? So I was saying that Mike Flanagan, when he does like these Netflix things, he has like the same actors kind of coming back over and over again. And he has like my favorite one, Carla Gugino. Lord, this woman. I love Carla. Good. Oh, I can't. I've been infatuated with Carla Gugino since the 90s. Like, I've been enraptured by her since Son-in-Law. Like, since the 90s. Since that Pauly Shore joint. Like, oh my gosh, she's so fine. Lord, I'm mercy, she's so fine. She just gets better. She just gets better with age. Like, God, I love this woman. All right, let me stop before I get in trouble. But yeah, so I love the show. Out of author's introspection for this, I ain't even gonna like do this whole spiel or write nothing for this. 5 out of 5. Like, absolutely. If you're a fan of Poe, there's a lot to like. If you're a purist of Poe, I can see where you would like have like a problem or issue with a couple things they tweaked here. A lot of stuff they kind of embellished and just changed it so they can make it like a 8-hour series. I'm not going to kill them over that. Like, there were a couple of things I'm just like, I'm not going to kill them over that, because overall, excellent job. Excellent show. Absolutely love it. Yeah, The Fall of the House of Usher. 5 out of 5. Yes. Oh, The Mask of Red Death. Oh man, when the acid comes down, it's just